is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Good afternoon. I am the host. I'm Chris Plunkett. I got a bit of a frog in my throat today, so bear with me. I will roll right into it. You know what? We have a ton of stuff to talk about. We have a great guest today, Claire Rubin. but I'll get to that in a couple minutes. I'm just talking. I want to talk about the tornadoes down in down south. I mean, you know what? I don't know if it's like global warming or not, but it's whacked out a ton of towns, and I shouldn't say whacked out like it's a Jersey thing, but it's amazing that are we paying attention more now that the tornadoes are more severe or the flooding is more severe? It's like that old adage about you know, you buy a car, it's a red car, it's a Ford or it's a Chevy, it's whatever it is, and then all of a sudden you notice it on the road. Is that the case here? For me personally, I've been in the disaster business at CPP Emergency Services. That's the name of my company. I'm also affiliated with the Service Master. That's a national franchise. We joined up a couple of months ago. But are these things more frequent? I don't know. Jerry Giesinger, who was my guest the last couple of weeks, the beginning of the program. He's a very astute individual about disaster recovery. He's got a lot. He's got his fingers and his pulse on many things. And you know, asking Jerry about the Mississippi and the flooding and so on and so forth. I mean, the Mississippi is like in the main artery for this country. So when that has a hiccup, and at this point it's not a hiccup, it's a major disaster. It affects the entire country because there's products, there's you know, Tennessee has a ton of plants down there, so you know those things affect the entire country. And to flip it onto the other side about Japan with the earthquake and the tsunami, you know we're not getting the same goods that we did before. I just wanted to talk about that just for a second. I also want to talk about which doesn't get enough press. I'm a big fan of 7 o'clock news on PBS with the unintrusive the news hour, and they give the points of that you don't see on the daily news. They talk about the vets and the war in Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan. I want to say something. I saw something in the news this past weekend in the Bergen Record, and that's where I live. It's called Healing Hands Ease Vets' Pains. It's chiropractors. It's an association of New Jersey chiropractors. It's called Healing Hands for Heroes, and I think it's a good cause, and I think the guys deserve it. I also some guys are participating, some chiropractors are participating and others aren't, but I think that it's going to make a good movement on that. You know, the guys are getting rotated back here. And there's also an issue with guys getting hired. So there's a background check on the guys, and you know, they serve their country. My brother-in-law Todd, great guy, did some humanity for building homes or homes for heroes. I think that's what it's called. He spent, about 4 or 5 weekends doing that kind of stuff, helping these guys out. Their wheelchairs, they have theirs, lots of issues, whether it's physical, whether it's psychological, and so on and so forth. But just want to, give out a shout for that. I think we're forgetting about that. It seems to be on the back page, and I'm not a big fan of that. I think it should be on the front page every single day of the news. So, with that said, there was something came last week. One of the questions was with volunteer firemen, because we came on the heels of contingency planning and municipalities and cities and so on and so forth. One of the questions that again came after the hour, after 2 o'clock. Do building departments have floor plans for the local fire department? And I think that was a great question. Personally, I know there's a stat out there of volunteer firemen and paid firemen that are going into these homes and commercial spaces, and they don't have the floor plan. And I'm not casting aspersions that they don't have it, but there is more often than not that they don't. I think people should volunteer. I know I have a floor plan in my house. I know the OEM director in my town, he's got that floor plan. With a couple of the buddies, we got Captain Dan O'Brien. He's a volunteer fireman. He's going to be chief one day, and there's a couple other guys in other departments. I think it's a, I think it's a good thing. I don't think it's an invasion of privacy. I just think it's saving a life, basically. And that's what the show really is about. How could we help? I think about it. An ex-Boy Scout, and I'm not going to say, I'm patting myself on the back, but, volunteering is huge. Coaches, baseball, softball, soccer, whatever, volunteer firemen, the guys with the boots, at the red lights, collecting a couple nickels and dimes. You know what? That's huge. That's America. And I was listening to, Netanyahu before I came on the show today, from Israel. Some things I agree with, some things I don't, but that's besides the point. But you know what? He's a person who advocates democracy, and I think that's what, preparedness is about. Talking with the ACP, the Association of Contingency Planners, a couple of weeks ago, and then the guys last week, I think America would be a better, not a better place as much as a more prepared place if we do the X and O's, connecting the dots, as my brother John would say. And we're gonna jump right into it. Today I have my guest is Claire Rubin. She's on the phone. She's calling in from D.C. It's Claire Rubin and Associates. Claire, how are you?
Hello, fine, thank you.
Was I rambling too much? I'm sorry about that.
Fine.
No, I was okay there. I wasn't babbling too much.
You're fine.
Yeah, they give me the thumbs up at the beginning of the program when they say the opinions and the expressing whatever they say.
Mm-hmm.
Insurance is always involved somehow or another. How are you?
Fine.
Claire, let's start from the beginning with your history of emergency managing. It wasn't. It's a new curriculum in the colleges and it's thought of more of the forefront, but it really wasn't that way. Pretty much 20 years ago, correct?
Yes, it's quite recent that you can get a degree in emergency management, and depending on the college, there's various ways to do it. mostly, it's a graduate program. Although increasingly undergraduates and community colleges are teaching emergency management.
Did you have an epiphany? Did you fall into it? Because for me, unfortunately, I was in janitorial for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then a buddy of mine who was in the insurance industry said to me, listen, you need to talk to this guy. He's in New York City. He's got an emergency service business. And I talked to him, and I got hired, and the next week, 9/11 happened.
Oh, wow.
So how did that, let's go from the beginning. How did that, because I some of the people that I know, some of the guys from D.C. and so on and so forth. How did that happen for you?
Right. Actually, it wasn't that dramatic for me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was pretty gradual. I got into the field more than 30 years ago, and it started with some work on earthquake program. At the time, I was working for the Professional Association for City Managers, ICMA, and some men came in who were working on a new federal program that had to do with earthquakes, the National Earthquake Hazard Reduction Act, and they wanted to get city managers and other public officials concerned with earthquakes, telling them it didn't just happen in Alaska and California, it was an issue. I got involved, and I got rather interested in that interconnection between scientists and an expert on one subject, like weather or a seismologist or a hydrologist,
right,
and what city managers, mayors, governors had to do to protect their people. So it was kind of a gradual immersion, but it's pretty gripping stuff, disasters.
Yeah, you know, I've been to a couple of conferences in the last couple of weeks. Well, I actually been to many, but I can't believe. No, I shouldn't say that. I do believe, but I can't believe that. You know, the municipalities are so up on training and schooling, but on a whole, the entire country. I hear some buzz and some intel from some of the guys. Like we need to do better. We need to notify the public, and it starts at home. Don't you agree?
As a matter of fact, FEMA Director Mr. Fugate has been trying really hard to make it clear that disasters are everybody's business and not just FEMA. I'm pretty impressed with what I see in Alabama and in Missouri, although it's a little bit early. These people have taken some extraordinary measures, particularly the people trying to save lives in the hospital in Joplin, Missouri. It's pretty impressive what people will rise to spontaneously, but of course, you know, we don't want to leave it to luck.
Right. You know what? That was something that Mike Gianchetta from the National Ready Corp was talking about a couple of weeks ago, was, people rising to the occasion. And, I mean, it's a fabulous country, and people do. But you know what? It's like a back page thing. At the beginning of the program, I was talking about, healing hands for vets.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why the reason I listened to the McNear News Hour at 7 o'clock, between 7 and 8 at night. I'm plugging those guys, but whatever. Because it doesn't get enough recognition. And with that, I think about your organization. You got the business. It's a constant push about making that plan and getting the public involved. Don't you agree?
Yes, I'm a very small business. You're talking to most of the employees right now. I'm of an age where I could be retired, but I really would like to make a contribution. I view my role as sort of informally educating and advising people, which is kind of why I do the blog. I'm particularly concerned. I think we do a pretty darn good job on response and a pretty good job on preparedness. But when it comes to long-term recovery, like what they're facing in Alabama, what they're up against for, it'll go on for months and years, and CNN won't be there, and no heroes will be jumping in and saving people. It'll be long, tedious work with a lot of debris and a lot of, broken lives and broken buildings. And that's the part that isn't getting enough attention, and that's what I've been working toward on with trying to emphasize recovery.
Yeah, and I agree with that. Let's go to the station break. This is Disaster Recovery Hour. Excuse me. I am your host, Chris Plunkett, Claire Rubin. We'll be back in a couple seconds.
When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need action fast. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration will find the visible and hidden damage caused by a fire or flood. With quick response and correctly applied damage mitigation protocols, CPP can save you valuable time and money and get you back in the game of life. Anytime disaster strikes, quick, focused action is what can save your property. CPP's professional staff is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's www.cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area.
Do you know that there are some emergency shelters that have no emergency backup generators? You can be prepared and have your own emergency generator for your home and business. Hi, I'm Dan O'Brien from Academy Electrical Contractors Incorporated. a full-service electrical contractor servicing the tri-state area since 1981. Our specialty is generators. We give you a complete turnkey installation, service your existing generator, rent you the temporary machine for that planned shutdown or that unexpected power failure. Academy Electrical Contractors can install a generator to protect your family and business from a power grid failure. Power your heating and air conditioning system, keep your refrigerator and freezer running, power your well pump, or power your sump pump. Visit us on the web at academyelectrical.com. That's academyelectrical.com. Or give me a call at 877-SPARKIES. That's 877-772-7597. Academy Electrical Contractors, generating satisfaction 24/7 since 1981.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works when other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
Welcome back. It's Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. On the phone with me from D.C. is Claire Rubin. Claire is a Claire. If I could roll through the blog here and talk about the Claire's been in 33 years of experience with emergency management and Homeland Security. And we were talking about before we went to the break. It wasn't this Homeland Security and FEMA. You know, the X-Files talked about FEMA way back in the mid-90s, but you know, nobody really knew about it, and I didn't know about it until I went downtown. You know, when they had the trailers for workers with 9/11, then I went to the Florida with the hurricanes. How did if you know, Claire, how did the government get involved with this? Was it like in your face, or was there a plan?
No, it was actually very gradual, and I don't think it was planned. Over the decades, in fact, during the 20th century, we've always had disasters. We had really big ones.
Yeah.
You know, 1906 San Francisco earthquake.
My mom with six kids.
Yeah. And, in 1918, the pandemic flu, and in 1927, Mississippi floods that look a lot like what we're seeing now. I mean, we've had disasters since the beginning of the country, but for many, many years, until only about 1950, everybody thought it was a private matter, a personal matter, not a government matter, and that the Red Cross and humanitarian organizations and your church and everybody else would help you out. Gradually, partly during the Cold War, when we were worried about bomb shelters and civil defense, and when disasters got to be big and really very expensive, and Red Cross couldn't afford them anymore, and citizens wanted more help and made demands on their government. So the federal government sort of got into it gradually, and then by the time we had Katrina, when everybody, there was a very large federal presence after 9/11, and everybody thought that would be fine. Well, Katrina proved that the federal government and other levels of government really could not do the job necessarily.
Yeah, and it's not a knock on the government as much as I had this meeting at the beginning of the show. There are some ex-government guys. You know, the government is, it's my opinion, they're stretched so thin. Private industry needs to step up, and some of these forums that I've been involved in, and I'm lucky. I'll tell you, I am a lucky guy. I am a lucky guy that I'm getting invited to these things, whether it's the, I think it's because of the show, but also it comes on the heels of me being involved, entrenched with preparedness and disasters. Not a knock on the government. You know, what do you see? I mean, the federal government slowly, Katrina is a perfect example, because I didn't go to Katrina. I was in Florida. I I was down there for I don't know how many months, back and forth. I couldn't do it again. I honestly just couldn't do it again. And I thought that the government and with the state, because you know you had the Fed and then you had the state guys.
And local government, if they're capable, and you know, like in the case of New Orleans, the locals really couldn't function. They were so badly damaged and underwater. But like in Florida, they were functional at the state and local government. And yeah, every level of government belongs in there. But I agree with you. Business belongs in there. Citizens need to be better prepared so that they can handle a quick relocation or going to a shelter. You know, have medicine, have your eyeglasses, have anything that you might need to keep you safe and comfortable, and be prepared to, I don't know, move to a relative's house, move to a hotel, move to a shelter. If individuals were more resilient, we'd all be better off.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what? I think I pay a lot of money in taxes.
Uh-huh.
So you say to you know, I have this conversation with my wife, and we talk about, well, geez, you know, we're paying, you know, over $10,000, if I will say that, in taxes. Not, you know, I'm not knocking my town, whatever like that, but it is what it is. And you say, well, they should plow my streets. They should do this. They should X, Y, and Z. You know, the funny thing, you know, these past storms up here in Jersey and in the New York City area, that we've exceeded our budget for plowing.
Yes.
Now we're in the hole.
Yes.
We're in the hole like $1.9 million.
Yep.
Claire, you know as well as I do, where's that money coming from?
I know.
You know?
No, and you got to stay prepared for other risks, including, you know, national security risks and other things. So, yeah, it's a tough allocation. But let me jump back to something you said. FEMA is an agency that the average citizen never has an encounter with. You know, if you're lucky, you'll never meet anybody from FEMA
right. Professionally.
They're only going to show up if all's failed, your local government is beyond capacity, your state needs help, and so you could consider it for just like the emergency room. If you never see the emergency room doctor, you could consider yourself fortunate.
You're right, exactly.
That's the end of the line, and that's when things are really out of control.
Locally, but you know what? Then it becomes widespread. You know, because you know it's like that old shampoo commercial. You tell one friend, you tell one another friend, and then it just, you know, it moves along. I do have a question from Meredith. I don't know where Meredith is calling from,
right. But
it says, I'm currently planning my future and can live almost anywhere in the U.S., but I do not want to live in a constant fear of tornadoes, fires, and earthquakes. I'm not a rebuilder. In my opinion, what is the best area to live in with the least amount of serious? It was on the news that the least amount of natural disaster. I don't know. What's your opinion on that?
Oh boy, that's a tough one. In actual fact, close to 40 states in the U.S. have some degree of earthquake risk. I don't know whether you know it, but your so-called Palisades area there in the New York, New Jersey area.
Yep.
Is a risky area. There's been earthquakes in Boston, in the Back Bay part of Boston, and in New England. And these you know, may have 400-year intervals, but you're at risk from earthquakes. So it's pretty tricky. She really should sit down with a couple of maps and get some ideas. We know where the highest likelihood of earthquakes are,
right.
Mostly in the western states. But riverine floods can do a lot of damage, and that would be Connecticut, Massachusetts, New Hampshire. So here in Washington, I guess you'd say we have mostly man-made disasters.
Yeah. without a doubt.
From our politicians.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
This area is not enormously risky in the mid-Atlantic areas. If you live along the coast and you admire the ocean, you're going to risk the wrath of the ocean when there's a nor'easter or a hurricane. And so it probably depends which type of disaster she most wants to avoid, but it's pretty tricky living without any.
Yeah, I agree. And D.C., Boston's got more of, like I said, it's got more of a natural effect if there is. D.C. and us here in the New York City area, we have man-made disasters. We have the possibility not the possibility, but the actuality of disasters with the man-made with terrorists. I'm speaking with Claire Rubin. Claire is part of the Claire Foundation. The Claire Rubin and Associates. Claire has been in the emergency service business, emergency disasters, homeland security. She's a researcher, a consultant, an educator. You have a plethora of intel. And squaring away, you're down in the lion's den down there, trying to get these guys to wake up and smell the coffee.
Right.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, in fact, you were coming on the heels of several conversations on the program with preparedness on the government end, and I'm sure it's not 9 to 5. I'm sure it's 5 o'clock in the morning. You wake up and you start doing your due diligence regarding. Regarding getting the word out, because you know I go back to that thing about you know, can you get taxpayers, and it is taxpayers, can you get them to realize, listen, we have a serious threat. We need to raise taxes. We need to put guards on reservoirs. We need to on bridges. You know, the Port Authority up here is very prevalent. Right there in face. With guns on the bridges, on the tunnels, you know, that's the world we live in now. We're going to go to a break. I got a couple of questions from some people, a couple of people from Florida, and we'll be back with Claire and, you know, play the music, pay a couple of bills, and we'll be right back.
When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need answers. CPP is the answer. CPP is a full-service emergency services and restoration company. With 25 years of experience in emergency management and restoration, their seasoned team of skilled professionals is ready to assess damages and restore your property to its pre-loss condition.
Who do I call first? What about insurance? Is it safe to stay here? What do I do next?
Fire, smoke, water, or mold, CPP restores your property and your peace of mind. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, they've got answers. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area.
I know it's tough to hear me with this firefighter's air pack on, but it's the only way I can be in this smoldering pile of ashes that was my office. And I could get in trouble, but I hope you won't make the same mistake I did, since at least 1 in 4 businesses that suffer this type of loss never reopen. So here goes. Just 3 days ago, we sat in this melted wreck of what used to be a conference room, talking about how good things were. Over there was the tech room. The fire's bad enough, but the water damage really gets me. Look, here's an article describing us as visionaries. I should have done our disaster plan, but with everything else, I just didn't see this coming. Visionaries, huh? Well, the good news is, at least the ashes can't burn down.
There'll always be a few fires to put out around the office, unless it's not around anymore. But when you have a disaster plan, you can adapt, recover, and stay in control. Go to Ready.gov and make your company's plan. Ready.gov. It's never too late to protect your business until it is. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. I'm Chris Plunkett. I am the host of the Disaster Recovery Hour. Every Tuesday between 1 and 2 on WVNJ, 1160 AM. Today my guest is Claire Rubin, Claire Rubin and Associates. Claire has been in the emergency service business assisting with the Homeland Security. And again, I will say plethora because I just learned that word this morning, Claire, by the way. it's like a $5 word. I love you. It just rolls off the tongue pretty well. But Claire has been involved in... with FEMA, the University of Maryland, Homeland Security, like I said before, George Washington University, the School of Engineering and Applied Sciences, again, plethora. There's not to make light of it, but it's And I think it's that way. Besides, you know what, Claire? Real quickly, we're still alive, by the way. The zombies haven't taken over, and it's not the end of the world.
Oh, right. We're still here.
You know, unfortunately, I have to pay my cell phone bill and my... you know? And by the way, Dave, I have to pay you too, right? But anyway, that is funny. You know, the CDC gave me a heads up, and I'm sure many others too, about how to deal with if there is a zombie attack. It's pretty good. I thought it was enlightening. I never dealt with a zombie. I don't know about you. I don't know about your schooling, but disasters don't encompass zombies in my world. It's fires and floods. So, Claire, we wanted a break, but... some of the things that I've talked with some of the other guests, because of the frequency of disasters and FEMA, I'm an advocate of FEMA. I think they do a good job. There's some bugs to be worked out. Yeah, only because I think it's bureaucracy. What's your take on that?
I think FEMA's trying really hard, and obviously in 5 years since Katrina, they both want to do things differently, and Congress has told them to do things differently. So they are working on it. They've clarified their lines of responsibility and authority, and there's some very experienced people in there. Craig Fugate as director, and his number two, Mr. Serino, who's just been down in Joplin. I saw him on TV last night. Mm-hmm. These are highly experienced people at the local level. So... Mm-hmm. They really know what's going on. They're trying hard, but bear in mind, FEMA, all of FEMA contains only a few thousand people.
Really?
And they're part of DHS, which is 200,000 people. And, for example, I live in Arlington County, which is probably about 450,000 people. If something were to happen here, we have a local emergency management staff of perhaps a dozen, and then they would call the state if they needed help, where there's probably a few dozen personnel, and then if there's really bad news, they would call the feds. But you've got to realize a few thousand people cannot help big cities of hundreds of thousands, like a New York City, without the help of a lot of other people, private sector, nonprofit sector, individuals, individual businesses who just swing into action. So let's get real. You know, it's a small core of experts directing things, but they can't do it all.
Right. I do have a question. Let me see. We have Michelle from Florida. We sympathize with those people going through the devastation. I would like to know if Florida has any contingency plan in place. I know that FEMA was here to help with the hurricanes. I know they have a contingency plan. What is your take? I was down there. What is your take on the hurricane area?
Florida is one of the best prepared states in the country. They have laws, as many other states do, requiring that locals have plans. In Florida, they put a very special emphasis on recovery planning, which is they're ahead of most other states. They have had a series of quite competent state directors. The new state director is someone who came from the Walmart chain, where he must have managed the disasters for Walmart stores worldwide. Walmart has its own emergency operations center at its headquarters, and they're quite well known for doing a very good job keeping their stores functioning. Now he's with the state of Florida. So all in all, the Florida people who have high risk, they've got an elderly mm-hmm. population,
right.
They have frequent hurricanes, their risks and vulnerabilities are high, but their capacity is quite good.
Yeah, exactly. Talking about the elderly, I get intel all the time about pets and the elderly.
Yep.
Expediting, you know, unfortunately, I mean, I could talk for another 4 days on that thing, but some of those hospitals or aftercare programs, I can't classify it properly because I don't know the terminology, but in New Orleans, some of those people just upped and left the elderly, and it was you know, they went to jail. You know, yeah. they went to jail, and which I don't want to be. Listen, I'm a radio guy. I don't know if I'm a radio guy, but you know what? I'm an emergency service guy who has got passion for preparedness and trying to do the right thing. But again, I'm like segueing right here. It's kind of cool. You know, I haven't done that in a long time. But we do have a question from Brent. Recently visited New Orleans, and there is still an amazing amount of help needed down there. How do we keep up the relief efforts in the future? What do you see, Claire? What do you see with your intel when it gets off the radar? Is it less? Is it it's all about the front burner or the back burner?
Oh yeah, it's tricky. CNN has an attention span of about 2 to 3 days. A big event will capture the attention, and then something else will come along, and off it goes. On the other hand, you do have all those networks of experts in place, and ideally you may have gotten lots of donations and offers of help, and those people will follow through even though it's gone off the radar. But the experts, like the FEMA director, may have to move from one state to another while they attend to the newest disasters. And God knows, the month of May has really been a busy one, and we're not even into hurricane season yet. So they've had an extraordinary month of May. That's hard, but locally they tend to stay focused, and frankly, it takes years. On average, FEMA doesn't close out a disaster declaration for 10 years. That's how long the paperwork and the decisions and the rebuilding goes on.
Really?
Yep.
That is...
I mean, formal closeout, where everything, every building and every argument and every discussion... They're halfway through that in New Orleans, and they're still arguing about things. It's 5 years.
That is amazing. That's amazing. I mean, our government's doing the right thing. I mean, I was in a meeting last week, and I think I said it. I can't remember if I did say it. I was with a State Department guy and a DOD guy, and they, you know, these guys are 24/7 guys. I mean, they're in a cubicle. I'm not casting aspersions here, but these guys are just banging their heads about scenarios. He was told this one guy, you know, I can't say his name, but great guy, a passionate American, talking about, you know, I think about how I can help my fellow citizens, you know, and it's truly amazing. Truly, truly amazing that the recognition doesn't get out there, such as yourself. I mean, with your, you know, you're affiliated with, again, with all the people that you've spoken to, again, National Academy of Public Administration, Innovative Emergency Management. I mean, I think when you put your head down on your pillow, there are people like yourself. And many, many others who were looking at scenarios and say, how can we help our fellow American? And it's I don't think there's enough ink or enough blogging, if you will, or Twitter or Facebook. It's amazing. I was talking to an ex FBI guy a couple of weeks ago, and he said, you know, I've been in the business 35 years. But it's always on the reactionary side.
Yeah.
It's not on the contingency planning side. And I'm like, God, that's... And he said, he was using my nickname. He's like, Plunk, man, I can't believe that you guys are talking about that. You know what, Claire, I got to be honest. I didn't know that. I was just wanting to give people the heads up on how to deal with fires and floods.
No, he's right. It's a very reactionary business. There's two things that I've worked on. One of the things I've been trying to do, particularly as I get older, is try and capture some of the experience and knowledge that just is floating around out there, and you'd have to interview 100 people to get it,
right,
to try and bring it into both coursework, and also we've done these disaster timeline charts, which are on my website. You can browse. They're kind of a graphic of the history of disasters in the last several decades. And also, I'm editor of a textbook called Emergency Management, The American Experience, 1900 to 2005. And we're trying to document all this so people understand. But indeed, we react after the fact, and we're not getting ahead of and anticipating enough things to be as ready as we should be. And that's the kinds of thing that I've been working on and concerned with. But definitely, it is a reaction business.
Yeah, Claire talked about the website. It is ClaireRubin.com. That's the website, and also RecoveryDiva.com. So it would be Claire, C-L-A-I-R-E, Rubin, R-U-B-I-N.com. That's the website, and then it is Recovery,
right?
R-E-C-O-V-E-R-Y, Diva. It's,
yeah, the other, from the main website, you'll yep. see the disaster timeline website, and the book I think is listed as well. But you can browse the timelines online, and you can take a look. But we attempted to document, for example, after 9/11, mm-hmm. there were dozens of laws passed. A whole new department created, the Department of Homeland Security, which
right.
didn't exist. All dozens and dozens of directives, mm-hmm. new organizations, new funding sources, and it just shows how an event happens. And then the various laws and regulations and organizations and policies and everything that flows from it. So, you know, you get hit between the eyes with the 2x4,
yeah.
and then you take action. But
yeah.
we shouldn't need 2x4s. We should be able to not keep getting those hard knocks to the head and anticipate.
Yeah, no, I agree. And again, I think I fell into. You know, when I go to these fires and these floods, my first thing is, you know, are you okay? So, but yeah, but because some of these things are not trivial, because it's their lives, it's their homes, it's their businesses. You know, a fire in a kitchen in a deli is a major occurrence. You know, these people are like, oh my God.
It could be the end of the business.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know if you know, some of the stats that are between the commercials that we get from Homeland Security and Ready.gov, you know, 1 in 4 don't recover from
at least. I've seen it more like 30%.
Really?
Yeah, no one knows that number for sure, but... we've even seen, for example, out in California after the Loma Prieta earthquake, some businesses that were perfectly intact went out of business because the freeway was knocked down.
Correct.
The people who lived in the neighborhood who patronized them were gone. People of a different income level or mm-hmm. with different consumer interests moved in. And occasionally, it's pretty surprising, a perfectly intact business will fail. Because so much has changed around it,
right? And you know, it goes with the ACP that I had on a couple of weeks ago. There's 43 chapters throughout the United States Association of Contingency Planners.
Mm-hmm.
These guys, which you know, I had a meeting with them yesterday. We're you know, getting the word out. We're going to go to a break on the phone. And coming out of DC is Claire Rubin from Claire Rubin and Associates, and she's a disaster expert, manager, and EMS person. I'll be right back. Pay some bills.
When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need action fast. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration will find the visible and hidden damage caused by a fire or flood. With quick response and correctly applied damage mitigation protocols, CPP can save you valuable time and money and get you back in the game of life. Anytime disaster strikes, quick, focused action is what can save your property. CPP's professional staff is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's www.cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area.
Do you know that there are some emergency shelters that have no emergency backup generators? You can be prepared and have your own emergency generator for your home and business. Hi, I'm Dan O'Brien from Academy Electrical Contractors Incorporated, a full-service electrical contractor servicing the tri-state area since 1981. Our specialty is generators. We give you a complete turnkey installation, service your existing generator, rent you the temporary machine for that planned shutdown or that unexpected power failure. Academy Electrical Contractors can install a generator to protect your family and business from a power grid failure. Power your heating and air conditioning system, keep your refrigerator and freezer running, power your well pump, or power your sump pump. visit us on the web at academyelectrical.com. That's academyelectrical.com. Or give me a call at 877-SPARKIES. That's 877-772-7597. Academy Electrical Contractors, generating satisfaction 24/7 since 1981.
At least one in four businesses affected by a disaster never reopen. Let me repeat, at least one in four businesses affected by a disaster, whether it's man-made or natural, never reopen. Yet far too many business owners put off their company's disaster.
You have five new
messages. Can you sign it for me, please?
Don't forget those copies for the presentation.
Disaster plan because they let too many day-to-day things get in the way.
Is that 3 p.m. going to be all right with your schedule?
Hey, don't forget that Stanton proposes due.
Be in the conference room in 5 minutes, please.
To save your messages, press 1.
Received dispatch, truck 47 en route to 614 North Front Street.
Received. Be advised, truck 47, heavy fire showing from the 9th floor. Second alarm being dispatched at this time.
Disasters are unpredictable, but when you have a plan in place, you can better adapt, recover, and stay in control. So don't wait. Visit ready.gov to make your company's disaster plan. Ready.gov. It's never too late to protect your business until it is. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. It is Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. On the phone, my guest today is Claire Rubin, Claire Rubin & Associates. Claire's website is clairerubin.com. That is C-L-A-I-R-E, Rubin, R-U-B-I-N.com. That's the website. And also the blog is recoverydiva.com. That is R-E-C-O-V-E-R-Y, Diva, D-I-V-A. com. Also, if you wanted to ask me questions, we have a ton of questions up on the screen. It's kind of cool, Claire. I mean, I'm an emergency service guy during the day, and I play a little radio during Tuesday afternoons, which is for me. I always think about it. You know what? There's this thing about in our industry the fires and the floods. You know, when you hear the whistle go off, it's like, oh, it's really there goes somebody's life. I just think about, you know, get these people back. I just closed a job in Jersey City, and great people down there. You know what? It was just an arduous chore to get things back in order. We got a couple of questions, Claire, but I do have Terry. One of his questions is: all natural disasters on the uprise, or am I just turning the news too much? So he's thinking, is it in the news lately, or has it been happening for a long time, Claire?
I'm sorry, all natural disasters are what?
And all natural disasters, he says, natural disasters are on the uprise, or am I just tuning into the news too much?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Yeah. I think some of it
Thanks,
is that
Tara,
we have better reporting. Various kinds of disasters go in cycles. Obviously, things like volcanoes that have eruption schedules that are hundreds of years apart to thousands of years apart. Floods, they talk about 100-year, 500-year floods. This tornado in Joplin, which was close to the top of the Fujita scale, apparently there's like a 1% chance that someone would get a tornado that's that deadly. And so we just seem to be having not to mention the frequency. Now there are those who would ascribe certain things to global warming. There are, of course, cycles of climate. There do seem to be coincidences in how many whether one volcano triggers another. Look at the earthquakes in New Zealand, in Japan. Mm. You know, they're unrelated to each other, but again, they were huge. So it's a combination of just odd cycles in the physical phenomenon, better reporting. CNN finds it mm-hmm. fascinating.
Right.
And then the third factor is that we're building in places we know damn well are dangerous. As
I know.
Like in
Crazy.
Florida.
Crazy.
If you're going to live in Arizona and you're going to live in Florida, and you live along the Gulf Coast, you are just taking a chance because the hurricanes were there first, and they will be there every single year,
yeah.
And you're going to take your chances. So
yeah.
It's all those factors.
Now, and believe me, I go away once a year to the same house, same part in Jersey. My kids, my nephews, my nieces, the whole thing. And this coming August is great because my sister and my brother are going to be at the same time for the first time in 9 years that my son Patrick will have his nieces and uncles and aunts there at the same time. But yeah, I think about, you know, my vacation area. I'm like, you know, two weeks out of the year. I think about it. I don't see when the tide goes out and the low tide. I'm like, is that a tsunami coming? You know, I think that way. I don't tell my wife. I'm not a panic driven guy. And I don't think I know the show isn't about that. It's about preparedness, right, and our government's involvement with preparedness and private sector. But I do have, I'm getting questions for you.
Let me just make the point that it is for you to decide, because if you're down at the beach, you won't be hearing the radio or the warnings. And if something peculiar is going on in the ocean or the tide, you should take care of your family.
Oh, no, no, no.
Don't go off duty. I think it's a smart idea to take care of yourself.
No. But, you know, when I go to a restaurant or I go to a ball game, I look for the exits.
Yep.
And I have my daughter who is very, very much in the frame of mind that I am. My son is coming along those lines. He thinks I'm being a pain in the butt, but when I walk in New York City with my daughter, you know, I got two hands. I clap two times for a left. I clap once for the right. We navigate through the masses, if you will. I definitely want to talk about children and with some of my law enforcement buddies about that. That's another show. But this is we're talking about preparedness with Claire Rubin. Claire, a couple questions that we have. It seems that the government should require preparedness courses to be taken in school. Does any state do this? I know of a couple of states that don't require it, but they offer it. What is your intel on that?
I don't know too much about what's mandatory. It's always an issue with the schools when you want to introduce something new. For example, lately people want to introduce personal financial management courses, and the teachers say the day is too full and we don't have time. But somehow it could be woven into a science curriculum. It could be woven into, I don't know, some personal behavior matters. But
I agree.
And in areas that are highly risky, in California and other places, they do need to be taught earthquake drills and things like that. So, yes, parents should sort of lobby for that, but understand that perhaps the Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts could do it outside of school time. But, you know, yes, keep thinking about how to do it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I've had this conversation with a couple of teachers. My wife's a teacher. It's amazing. Governor Christie is talking about tenure and our students, our teachers, you know, being evaluated properly. Are they getting rolled over? It's a simple 10-year kind of process. I went through it with my wife. I got to advocate for the teachers, and I'm not doing it because I'm married. I disagree with my wife all the time, but really, I mean, it was an arduous chore. She was evaluated, I think, 30 times in 3 years. You know, you're not getting eyeballed like that in the private industry. That's just my opinion. Okay, I mean, people can blog on and call into the show and so on and so forth, and disagree with me. I do have, by the way, that preparedness in the school that was from Trudy. I don't know where Trudy's calling from or web question. We got a couple minutes rocking and rolling. The show, you know what, after the 30 minutes, it just seems to fly. I'm like, I always tell Bill about, man, we need another hour for the program. But we have another question. It's from Harold. It says, please ask Claire how she thinks the U.S. ranks in terms of disaster preparedness compared to the rest of the world. What's your thoughts on that, Claire?
Well, we rank quite well. There are differences. For example, recently the Japan earthquake made it clear that the Japanese preparation, both the government's preparation, stockpiling things, preparations in the schools, that the construction standards that they imposed were much higher than we're able to achieve in the U.S. so far. Mm. But as you know, the Japanese then had a tsunami and a radiological incident, and really quite good preparations for the earthquake went quite unnoticed. So certain types of incidents or certain types of technology, another country may be more advanced. on the whole, as much as we complain about what we need, we're doing a pretty good job. Other countries, England, Australia, New Zealand, the English-speaking ones that I know more about, and whose form of government is like ours, do pay attention to what we're doing. Occasionally, they innovate better than we do, but we spend a lot of money training. People from other countries come to our training programs, benefit from our things. And I just make a final point. What I've noticed is almost half of the hits on the Recovery Diva site are coming from other countries, much to my surprise.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what it means, and the diversity of the countries is enormous, but they are paying attention and getting something out of it. But since I don't talk to these people, I don't know who they are, I don't know quite what it is.
Well, you know, hopefully they're on the website and listening to it, because that's the beauty about the mass media and the social media, is that you could be on the computer, not in the car, and hear this type of show. I do advocate the program, and, you know, I've seen some things I should not have seen, but I had to deal with some disasters. It's just, as well as you, as was, you have, Claire, it was a pleasure. And again, social media is wonderful. You know, I never knew the program was really, when we started it, it was about how do we help people from their personal disasters, you know, floods and fires. And then it just, it morphed into this whole other thing and about teaching people or getting experts in discipline areas of like yourself. You know, I mean, you have the pulse of the government and your private sector, but you have the pulse of what are they thinking, you know. Claire, I can't thank you enough. I hope you enjoyed yourself. I know I did. I'm laid back here. I got a nice little glass of water here. Things are good. I hope we continue the relationship. Any quick sign-offs? We do have Claire's website. It was ClaireRubin.com. Again, it's, and also the blog is RecoveryDiva.com. Anybody who wants to talk to Claire, ask questions, go to my website, and you can click on Claire. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you, Chris. Bye now.
Take care now. That was a great show. I'm still fortunate that all these people come out of the woodworks to educate me on preparedness. I want to tell some of the guys out there. I got my boys over there in the PO office, a bunch of good buddies, and I'm down to 10 seconds, probably 5. My sister, let's end the war and bring home our troops. God bless our country. Take care now.